Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome once again to the Steve Jones Show. We got a busy day today to talk about stuff from Tony Knopp, Spotlight Ticket Management, on the business of sports. Also have some of the Bill Belichick, I don't want to really call it a news conference because there was no news in it. How about we call it just a question and answer session? Let's face it, when Bill Belichick does a news conference, there's never any information that comes out.
I had no knowledge of the various steps involved in the game balls and the process that went through that happened between when they were prepared and went to the officials and went to the game. So I've learned a lot about that.
That might be one of the longest sound bites I've ever heard from Belichick.
Well, you know what? To be frank with you, I buy it.
I'm not saying he's really wrong.
A lot of people don't. I do.
No, I'm not debating that he didn't know anything about it. I'm just saying that's one of the longest sound bites I think I've ever heard about. I do like this comment, though, afterwards.
With our footballs being inflated to the 12.5-pound range, any deflation would then take us under that specification limit. Knowing that now, in the future, we will certainly inflate the footballs above that low level.
Okay, yeah. Let me see if I get this straight. Because you've inflated so far, you know if they deflate it more, it'll be below the legal level, so you're going to make sure they inflate it more.
Well, okay.
Explain that.
Okay, easily. What did Aaron Rodgers say Monday?
I heard a couple of different things, but it's not been consistent, so I don't know exactly what he said. I've heard paraphrasing.
Aaron Rodgers says, I like a fully inflated football. He doesn't like when he gets a ball that's partially deflated.
Okay.
Well, if you're playing in a game and it's cold out, the ball will deflate. Okay. I mean, especially you're playing in Green Bay.
Right.
That's a concern.
Sometimes it's 10 degrees.
Right. The ball's going to deflate. It just will. It's just nature. That's why they have the 12.5 to 13.5 rule. They give you a little leeway in there. So if you're at full, and you know you're playing in New England, New England, the final part of the season, it's going to get cold there. It was not on Saturday. It
51
was
ridiculous. Isn't cold.
Sunday. It was, 51 degrees?
51.
So it wasn't as the game went.
But knowing that, and I'm sorry, to me that's a little common sense, especially if you're the equipment manager, knowing that, you're going to want to make sure there's a little bit more inflation than what you want. Because
you don't really
it's care. Going to naturally go away. I mean, unless you went down to Sunbury Motors and used nitrogen to fill them up, it's going to happen because, like you said, the weather. Think about your tires and your car.
Yeah, but I don't think people worry about as the game goes along. I mean, as long as you're meeting specifications when the game starts, nobody really cares after that. You know, I think what people are worried about now is it's dramatic. 11 IPS is a dramatic. I mean, you're now 15 to 20% below where you should be. That's the issue.
I watched Carson Palmer this morning take a football, and I'm assuming he used the same type of grip. And you could see where he was able to make an impression into the football that was underinflated, about the same type of what the Patriots are said to have used. and a fully inflated ball. So you can actually see the grip that's available.
Sure. Well, I mean, if a quarterback wants it less, I mean, I'm sure Brady's going to be on it 3:45. I can tell you no uncertain terms that what he's going to say. I like to have the ball down at the lowest legal level, 12 and a half. That's all he's going to say. I don't know how these balls got in there. I have no idea. That's all he's going
to
say.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect him to say anything more than that either.
That's all he's going to say. I mean, K balls are specific too, you know.
Yes.
And they threw the ball out in the game the other day where they thought maybe it was a K ball. One time in a Penn State basketball game, this is at Rec Hall, and this is during the Pete Lisicki era, they threw a ball out of the game because Pete Lisicki took the ball and he said, not the right ball, and he handed it over. They said, no. He says, no, it's a women's basketball. The Lisicki knew right away. Some guys know right away.
Well, and that's another side that I don't think is getting a whole lot of attention right now, besides the fact that the Patriots did it or didn't do it on purpose. I don't want to talk about that right now.
Look, if this is the Minnesota Vikings, nobody cares.
Well, that's probably true as well. But what I want to know is,
and I am not a Patriots fan. Everybody knows I grew up in New England. Sure. I did not grow up a Patriots fan. Never did. Okay, you know. So again, no dog in the hunt here. If it's not the New England Patriots and history with Spygate and allegedly watching the Rams walk through before the Super Bowl and things like that, people do not care.
Well, my question is how the officials didn't notice it, touching the ball almost constantly through the game.
Because it's quick. Everything's quick. You're trying to get the ball, run the ball over, put the ball down. Okay, get it ready for play. You know, you run a no-huddle offense. Okay, you know, I'm trying to hold the defense. They're not really handling the ball as often as you think. What cracks me up is when the media gathers around Vince Wilfork and says, all right, what do you think about all this? Okay, A, Vince Wilfork plays defense, okay? B, the balls are in play when he plays are from the other team. All right. Why do you have useless, wasted time by people asking other people questions that have nothing to do with it?
Even I know that.
Well, you sit there, he looks at the person like, are you nuts? If Vince Wilfork recovers a fumble or intercepts a pass, it would have been the Colts football. and he's got people asking what he's looking at, like, I don't know, what the heck, what are you asking me for?
Yeah, even I know that didn't make any sense.
Look, there's only one guy you need to ask, and that is the guy at 3:45. After that, there's nobody else to ask. I mean, I really doubt Jimmy Garoppolo has the kind of pull to get people to go, hey, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo likes the ball a certain way. Who really cares if Jimmy Garoppolo does?
Steve, I have Tony on the line in Shamokin.
Tony, hola, buenos dias, bonjour.
Score was 45-7. That all had to do with a deflated football?
You got that right, Tony. That's the saving grace for the National Football League and all this. That game was a rout, and guess what? LeGarrette Blount could have gone out there and carried a cantaloupe and would have gained 200 yards.
Right. I mean, do you remember, I guess it was back in the 80s, University of Texas punter, he stole a ball with helium?
Yes. I remember that. Is that Russell Erksleben?
That's who it was, yeah. Great punter.
Yeah, great punter, great place kicker. But remember, they used to kick off of a tee when they did place kicks. And he kicked a 69-yarder in a game, 69 yards. But they used to do it off a 2-inch platform tee. And he was the first-round pick of the New Orleans Saints. And the NFL didn't use that contraption.
Yeah, they use it in high school, though.
And They didn't put helium in their footballs either.
Well, I don't know. The hang time must have been impressive for those kicks, though.
That's a good one, Tony. I like that.
Hey, listen, have a good day. I think this is a story that's not going to go away. We're going to hear about it every day up until the Super Bowl.
Absolutely, Tony.
Win, yeah, the Patriots win. Oh, they cheated, you know, so. Oh, well,
oh,
that's
yeah.
the mainstream media for you today.
But that, you know what? But you got to remember, part of the problem is that there's too much of a pack mentality out there. There are very few independent thinkers. And that's why
right.
the people that are independent thinkers are the ones that actually do stand out as somebody that people do listen to because they're independent and they just don't go with the crowd all the time.
They have an original thought. There you go.
How
hey,
about
listen,
that one?
Day, guys. Yep.
Thanks, Tom.
Take care.
You too. 800-795-9565. Your guy, Jeff Gordon, is going to retire after this year.
Wanted to make sure
that everyone knew ahead of time so he could do a victory lap.
That's what that's all about.
You'll buy in. You'll go. 800-795-9565. We're also going to talk to Tony Knopp today, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management.
I'm not going to go to see him.
This is your guy.
No,
you've been
not.
Big Gordon guy. Come
no.
on. It's what this is all about. You know, every time you set up a guest, it's about like your deal.
Wait. I'm not allowed to set up a guest because it's my deal then? Sorry for thinking about the big sport of NASCAR and the populace in this area that enjoys it.
Cindy's over there hitting her buzzer right now.
Yes, you've now gotten
Cindy.
Yep.
I'm going to get the wrath of Cindy between now. Don't pick on Kevin. Cindy, my only advice is he needs to stop doing stuff they get picked on for. by the way, tonight, Patrick Chambers, Penn State basketball. Last night, Penn State lost to Michigan State 66-60. The key, I can always pick out in a game, usually anyway, 4 or 5, up to as many as 7 or 8 different moments that swing a game one way or the other. Not last night. Last night, especially over the final 35 minutes, was a really well-played game by both teams. Good flow to it. Great moments. Penn State tied the game in the second half 7 times. In the second half, they tied the game 7 times. They could never quite get over the hump last night. But this was a game that turned on one key moment. And it was a combination. It was a combination of them. One was, I think it was Brian Forbes for Michigan State spun Shep Garner around like a top by hooking him underneath. And they called the foul on Garner, and Garner looked over and he says, "What did I do? I was a victim." And that got things rolling for Patrick. It was Garner's 4th foul. And Dick, I didn't see the play. Dick saw the play as it happened. He says, "I can't believe they called that." He said, "The foul's on the other guy." Well, then there was one where Newbill went in and he got hammered by Dawson. And I had a perfect view of that. It was 20 feet from me. It was no call. Well, the call on Dickerson, Patrick had nothing to get a tee. That was a 1-point game. You do not. You got to be the coolest cat in the building. You can't call that technical foul. You can't do it. You got to resist everything in your mind because it's a 1-point game.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Jeff Gordon announced today that he is going to actually limit his schedule. I don't think he's retiring, right?
The story was retirement.
He's going to limit his schedule. Uh, 2015 NASCAR events. June, what, 5, 6, 7? Is the Pocono 400 weekend. Pennsylvania 400 is July 31, August 1, August 2. Now, did they pick an Indy date yet?
Yes, they picked it. It's August 22nd, the weekend of the 22nd.
Well, no. I have their website up, and they have the NASCAR weekends announced.
That one's also on there, yes.
Well, no, it's actually not.
You might be looking at the NASCAR section.
Okay. Also, make sure we get this right. It's August 22nd.
Yeah, Pocono 500, August 22nd through 23rd.
Good. All right, Brandon Igdalski is going to join us now, who's the president of the Pocono International Raceway. First of all, Brandon, thanks for carving out a few minutes. I know you're really busy.
Yeah, no problem. Glad I could be here.
Well, the announcement by Jeff Gordon is interesting because he will race a full schedule in 2015. That means both of your races as well. Did you find, first of all, what was your reaction when you heard that he has decided to cut back, if not out altogether?
I was a little surprised. I figured the end of next year, I figured he would go through 16. But hey, I'm not Jeff Gordon, and man's got to do what he's got to do. But I guess he thought the time was right for him and his family and his future, and I'm going to wish him all the best.
Did you hear anything at the box office today about people that might be interested in maybe a little more juice because of the two races at Pocono?
Maybe a little bit of bump here and there. I think it's pretty early for people the guy just announced it. We still got 36 race season ahead of us. We haven't even started yet. We're already talking like he's done. But I definitely think you're gonna have a lot of people that are gonna come out just to see Jeff's last race. At each of the tracks that they attend. So it's gonna be an exciting time for sure for everybody.
Well, the two that he'll be there without question will be June 7th for the Pocono 400, and then the Pennsylvania 400 August 2nd would be the two that you'd be looking at with him. When you look at the crowd that comes out to a NASCAR race at Pocono, everyone brings obviously their own section of fans, but some more so than others. What has the Gordon contingent always been like in terms of the ticket sales that they bring to the table?
Pretty good. I mean, Jeff's got a big following here in Pennsylvania. And, I think Jeff's a couple years older than me. And I think he resonated really well with people my age coming into the sport, in the early 90s there. We were finishing up high school and starting college. He was somebody that was the original young gun, essentially. He came into the sport. He went against the big guys, the Dale Jr., the Dale Seniors and the Cale Yarbroughs and Darrell Walsh and those guys. He went head to head with those guys and drove with them, drove better than them. Beat them, and I think it really resonated with people. And just like a lot of guys in the sport now, they come in and they do pretty well. He got booed a lot. My grandfather, late Dr. Mattioli, one of the first times Jess was there, and they booed him during driver intro. He goes, "They boo you because they're going to love you," and here we are. 23 years later, that's coming to fruition. They no longer boo him. They cheer the heck out of him, and he's well respected by the people that used to root against him. He's obviously well respected by his fans and loved by his fans, and has a great personality in the sport that people really honor and take pride in the way that Jeff has conducted himself all these years.
You would know him, though, then in a different way than a fan would. You have to deal with him because of the business end of it. What kind of individual has Jeff Gordon been to deal with?
Phenomenal. That's the best word I could use to describe him. I've had to work with him on a professional level, and sometimes athletes aren't exactly the easiest people to deal with. And I can tell you that I've never had a situation like that with Jeff. Or any of his folks that we work with through him with. He's always been a consummate gentleman. He's a fan of motorsports first and foremost, and understands the promotion side of what goes into putting on a race. He's willing to step up and help us out any way he can. It's been tremendous there. And personally, we've grown a personal friendship over the last couple of years as well. And I've got to kind of see the man that he is. As a friend and as a father and a husband, and he's just as dedicated to that as he is to hit the sport that he loves.
It's difficult to put together any schedule. I don't care if it's putting together a football schedule, a basketball schedule. I think people think it's easy when it's extremely difficult. How pleased were you with the two dates that you ended up with, the two weekends of 5, 6, 7 in June, and then July 31, August 1, August 2? How pleased were you with how that fit into your schedule?
For us, it's great. I mean, those are our traditional dates. We're able to hold on to those. And for us, everybody always says to us, oh, your race is so close together. You guys, how can you do that? For us, it actually works out perfectly. We have very little crossover in the two crowds. So we're basically catering to two different crowds, the same, during a very short span. Second, the first race comes right as schools let out. So you have everybody's got the anxious summer bug, and they want to get out and do something outdoors. The second race in August there is vacation time, especially here in the Pocono Mountains. Everybody's getting away before you got to go back to school, before the kids go off to college. It's the last family vacation of the season, and we see that here in the Pocono Mountains. So both of our races fit perfectly with that. And now moving the IndyCar race to late August from that 4th of July weekend we had the last couple of years, we'll see how that plays out and what the future's going to hold there with them.
Yeah, I'll ask about that in just a moment. Obviously, your track is different than others. It's not an oval like Indianapolis. It's not a road course like Watkins Glen. It's the tricky triangle. What has Jeff Gordon told you about your track and what he likes about your track and any suggestions he's had about your track?
He apparently likes winning there a lot. He's the most winningest driver we have. So he does pretty well with triangles. He's done pretty well for himself, in his career at Pocono Raceway. Jeff loves it. I mean, it's because it's so different. A lot, we got beat up for years about Pocono. A lot of it was just because of the old surface we had. All tracks get old, and when the surface gets old, it gets bumpy. When your subsurface is 40-plus years old, it's going to be a little more bumpy. But now, since we did the repave in 2012, that love affair the drivers have had with Pocono for 40 years is back, and you hear that. You hear, listen to all of them talk about how much they love coming to Pocono and racing Pocono now. Obviously, the new car, everything NASCAR has done, around the sport to improve competition has been tremendous. And it came at the right time for us because it all happened at the same time we did a repave. So it was a perfect culmination for us of everything happening. And we've had some of the best races in our history in the last few years. But Jeff loves running the Pocono, always has. Since his rookie year, he's always enjoyed it. No matter who the crew chief is on top of the pit box, whether it's Alan or Ray or anybody in between, Jeff's always seemed to run really well there, and I think he's won with every crew chief he's had.
Brandon Ingdahlsey joining us from Pocono International Raceway. When you look at, you're very responsive to your fans, right? And part of it, you're responsive to the drivers too. That's why the repave was so important. What are a couple of things that you picked up in the last couple of years that you want to put in this year to make Pocono even more fan-friendly?
We're working really close right now with the state of Pennsylvania on improving our roadways, our access to and from the track, obviously, for the fans. Mm-hmm. Get them in, get them out faster. Anytime you get that many people in any place, I don't care where you're at, whether you're at, you're a major NFL stadium, baseball stadium, or racetrack, you're not going to get them out, that fast when they're all leaving at the same time. That's one thing we're working on right now. You know, we're looking at new video boards. We're looking at Wi-Fi connectivity around the facility. You know, all the things that, that a traditional sports fan is looking for, whether you're in a stadium, arena, or racetrack, you know, we're looking over the next couple of years of bringing all that in. We've slowly modernized the facility, but at the same time, we're poking a raceway. We know who we are. We know where we came from. We know where we want to be, and we're not going to forget who we are. We're not going to be the biggest and prettiest and fanciest facility, and we don't want to be. We want to be a little bit of throwback, a little bit of modern, a whole lot of fun.
Part of the throwback is bringing IndyCar back. It used to be part of the USAC Triple Crown with Pocono, Ontario, which no longer exists. There's now Fontana, and Indianapolis. You've had the race there. You mentioned it was on the 4th of July weekend. It moves now to August 22nd. Give me an idea of the importance of this year's race for the future of that race.
Well, you know, the fans have begged us for years to bring IndyCar back, and we did. Did, you know, us with IndyCar maybe make the wrong decision on the date originally put it on? I think we probably did. You know, if the fans had said they were going to come, you know, and the fans had said that they'll definitely come if it's on a different date, the 4th of July weekend, we should do pretty good this year. You know, IndyCar wants to be at Pocono. Pocono wants IndyCar. It's just a matter of making it work for everybody. I mean, it's a business for them, and it's a business for us. And, you know, it's not always about making money. Sometimes it's about breaking even. And, you know, the fans are here. We know that. There's more fans here in the Northeast United States than anywhere else in the country. You know, there's a huge population around us, obviously. So we have a much, you know, better draw than a lot of other facilities around the country as far as, you know, the willingness of fans to travel in. We have a beautiful vacation area. So it's, you know, it's definitely a make or break year, but I think unless something dramatic happens, I think you'll see, you know, IndyCar Pocono for years to come.
And something that people comment on when the IndyCar guys came back, and it was also happened last year, everyone kept sitting back saying, "I can't believe how fast they are."
It is crazy how fast they are. I mean, they're doing 225, 230. Going into turn one, and they are barely getting off the gas. I mean, they're just about flat out around the facility. It's mind-boggling. I had a chance the first two they came back to go actually out and sit outside of turn one behind the catch fence there. I can tell you, as a kid who grew up around that place, has seen every kind of car, and probably has a million laps around that in all kinds of different vehicles. I can tell you that watching those guys go into turn one is probably one of the coolest things I've ever witnessed in my life.
Brandon, thanks so much. Pocono is very, very important to the sport, and it's also very important to Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for carving out a few minutes for us today.
Yeah, no problem. And if you're interested in tickets, tickets are on sale for all of our races next summer right now. Just go to PoconoRacer.com.
Perfect. I'm glad you were able to get that out there. Brandon, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you later.
Brandon Igdalski, President, Pocono Raceway. We'll come back with more in a moment. Tony Knopf, CEO, Spotlight Ticket Management, still to come, where he destroys Kevin's image of sports by talking about cash. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. Phil Collins.
Very good.
No, I'm glad you think so. That was a joke.
I know.
Oh, sometimes I feel like sometimes I have to send up a flare.
No comment.
Dave Baker's killing me today. He says, Dave Baker sent me an email today. It's just a picture. Seventh hole, Pebble Beach. Right now, I'm emotionally crushed. Now, Curacao has a tournament. They've also sent me a picture of the eighth hole at Blue Point Resort.
I would think Curacao might be a little bit warmer right now than Pebble Beach.
Everything is. PGA West La Quinta. He sent me this bunker that goes about... Hey, this has you written all over it.
Okay.
It's about 100 yards. And I could hear it now. I can't believe it. I'm telling you, my slice should have carried me right over it.
What, is it left or right? Do you play it left or right?
It really doesn't matter. You would have found it.
I see what you're saying. I got it. Hey, did you hear that all three London games are a.m. kickoffs at 9:30 in the morning?
No, that's because they want to create the quadruple header.
How many of us are surprised about that move by the NFL?
Yeah, but that's 9:30 Eastern time. That's not an effect on the players or the fans in London. Those games are 2:30.
No, so it doesn't affect. This is just from a viewership standpoint.
I have no issue at all with that because they are not making the players play at 9:30 in the morning.
Right.
For example, when the Big Ten plays noon games, and we're in the central time zone, game's at 11 o'clock in the morning. Really? Just like I think it is wrong, if you're going to play a team from the West Coast and have them come east to play you, you need to have the game at 3:30, in all fairness. Hey, we're going to have a noon kickoff today. Penn State and USC at Beaver Stadium. Their body clock says it's 9 a.m. Yeah, it takes certain things into account. 9:30, I have no problem with them kicking off at 9:30 in the morning in the States. It was a huge hit that they did it this time. They got a great viewership at 9:30 on a Sunday morning. It was terrific. Right? But it's not a burden on the players or the fans because it's 2:30 in the afternoon in London. That's fine with me.
I think the most important thing, though, to note is that it's the Jets-Dolphins, Bills-Jags, Lions-Chiefs. So the only one, really, that will be affected by that early start as far as a fan base is concerned is maybe Lions-Chiefs. Everything else... it's going to be a fairly, it's going to be a 9:30 start. It's not like you have a West Coast team playing that you have to get up at 6:30 in the morning
point.
To watch.
It's a really good point.
I mean, the worst case is the Lions-Chiefs fans will have to get up. It'll be an 8:30 kickoff.
Right, and that's a very good point. Very good point. People talk about the various start times that I see all the time. I mean, I'm all over the map as to what time, we're on the air, things like that.
Just point to me when the red light comes on.
Well, no, but you got to be aware of it. For example, I know on the 31st, for example, Penn State plays at Illinois. Well, that's going to be a noon tip-off. It's going to be 11 a.m. there, which means we're on the air 10:30 a.m. there. It'll be 11:30 here. Okay. Well, I mean, for us, it's no big deal. To us, it's still a noon 11:30 big deal, like Saturday's game is with Rutgers here. Yeah, but for them there, that's a big deal. And part of the deal is, you know darn well, you're a TV show. And in the end, that's what you are. You're a TV show. I mean, I catch a break on Saturday. The Big Ten Network wants to air Penn State Northern Michigan hockey. Okay, well, I catch a break on that one because the Big Ten Network wants to air it. They've gone from a 3:30 start to a 4:30 start. Well, where do I catch a break there? They've asked me to be a part of the broadcasting. So I'm going to be the on-ice guy with all the between-period interviews and blah, 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 and things like that, whatever little tidbits I throw in. But I've got a basketball game at noon. I'll be off the air by 2:30. I'll walk across the street and do that. But it gets moved to 4:30 because TV wants it at 4:30. That's the time slot they wanted to fill. Well, Penn State's more than happy to do that. They want the game on.
You remember 2 years ago when we were at Pocono for what was then the Pocono 400, the IndyCar 400. We asked Brandon that day, why 400 miles? He said, that's all television would give us time for.
Right.
And at that point, it was an ABC network broadcast. Now that NBC mm-hmm. Sports Network has taken it over, now they made it a 500-mile race.
Mm-hmm. Right, they have more time. I'm surprised you remember any of that.
That might have been the best broadcast of my life. I hung out with Scott Goodyear the day before. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
I mean, you were in your absolute glory.
I felt like that was the smartest I think I've ever felt, and I still wasn't smart.
You're always smart.
In my own way.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.
CBS News. I'm Hartley Carnes. The third all-time winning NASCAR race driver, Jeff Gordon, says this will be his last year as a full-time racer.
I've given a lot to the sport. The sport's given me.